Na,
na, na.
By us.
By us.
Svaritam.
Svaritam.
Studied.
Studied.
Gurava.
Gurava.
Superior persons.
Superior persons.
Spiritual masters.
Spiritual masters.
Prasadita.
Prasadita.
Satisfied.
Satisfied.
Vipra.
Vipra.
The Brahmanas.
The Brahmanas.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Vidha.
Vidha.
Those who are elderly.
Those who are elderly.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Satanubritya.
Satanubritya.
By our gentle behavior.
By our gentle behavior.
Arya,
Arya,
those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge.
Those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge.
Nata,
Nata,
we're offered obeisances.
We're offered obeisances.
Suridha,
Suridha,
friends.
Friends.
Bratara,
Bratara,
brothers.
Brothers.
Cha,
Cha,
and.
And.
Sarvani,
Sarvani,
all.
All.
Bhutani,
Bhutani,
living entities.
Living entities.
Anasuyaya,
Anasuyaya,
without any enviousness.
Without any enviousness.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Yat.
Yat.
What.
What.
Na.
Na.
Of us.
Of us.
Sutaptam.
Sutaptam.
Severe.
Severe.
Tapa.
Tapa.
Penance.
Penance.
Etat.
Etat.
This.
This.
Isha.
Isha.
O Lord.
O Lord.
Nirandhasam,
Nirandhasam,
without taking any food,
without taking any food.
Kalam,
Kalam,
time,
time.
Adabram,
Adabram,
for a long duration,
a long duration.
Apsu,
Apsu,
within the water,
within the water.
Sarvam,
Sarvam,
all,
all.
Tat,
Tat,
that.
Etat,
Etat, this,
this.
Purushasya,
Purushasya,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Bhumna,
Bhumna,
the most exalted,
the most exalted.
Vrini Mahe,
Vrini Mahe,
we want this benediction,
we want this benediction.
Te,
Te,
of you,
of you.
Paritoshanaya,
Paritoshanaya,
for the satisfaction.
For the satisfaction.
The translation, this is another verse or prayer spoken by the brothers, the Pachetas, in the direct presence of Lord Vishnu. Dear Lord, we have studied the Vedas, accepted a spiritual master, and offered respect to Brahmanas, advanced devotees, and aged personalities who are spiritually very advanced. We have offered our respects to them, and we have not been envious of any brother, friends, or anyone else. We also have undergone severe austerities within the water and have not taken food for a long time. All these spiritual assets are ours, all these spiritual assets of ours are simply offered for your satisfaction. We pray for this benediction only and nothing more. Purport. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, some sit here, Hari Toshanam. The real perfection of life is pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vedaishcha Sarvera Aham Eva Vedya. In understanding the Vedas, one has to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who has actually understood him surrenders unto him after many, many births. We find all these qualifications in the Pachetas. They underwent severe austerities and penances within the water, and they did not take any food for a very long time. They practiced these austerities not for material benediction, but for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. One may engage in any business, material or spiritual, but the purpose should be the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This verse presents a perfect picture of Vedic civilization. People training to become devotees should be respectful not only to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but also to those who are elderly in knowledge, those who are Aryans and actual devotees of the Lord. An Aryan is one who does not boast, but is an actual devotee of the Lord. Aryan means advanced. Formerly, those who claimed to be Aryans had to be devotees of the Lord. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna chastised Arjuna by saying that he was speaking like a non-Aryan. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Kutastva kashmalam midam vishame samupastitam anarya justam asvargyam Akirti Karam Arjuna. The Supreme Person, Bhagavan, said, "My dear Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the progressive values of life. They do not lead to higher planets, but to infamy." That's Bhagavad Gita 2.2. There's a few more paragraphs. I'll stop here, speak for a while. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimadi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sinyavadi Pastitari Satarani. So the Pachetas statement here is to mention all kinds of very auspicious spiritual activities and right behavior, one after another, of studying Vedas, accepting a spiritual master, practicing austerity, non-enviousness, and so on. And then they conclude that, my dear Lord, please be satisfied, or please accept this as an offering. That's our only wish from you, that you accept them as offerings, as devotional service. So this is very good, that we should do everything for Krishna. Yat karosi, yat ashnasi, yat jahosi, didasi, yat tapasya sakonti, yat tat karusha madarpanam. Krishna says also, whatever you do, whatever you offer in charity, whatever austerities that you perform, do it as an offering unto me. Now, if they had not offered these things to Krishna, then, although in this case these activities are all auspicious Vedic functions and religious or moral behavior, it would not be of any value. So that there are such people, yogis and certain transcendentalists, who try to do a lot of these things, but they don't have a concept that the goal is to please Krishna. They're impersonalists. So in the end, as described in another place, the only result they get is the effort of work itself that they put into it. If you want to call that a benefit, just to say that you work. If you work all day, but you don't, somehow or other you get cheated of the result, there's no result because of your defective way of work, then you can say, well, I did, at least we labored. The Bhagavatam gives the example that somebody is beating some rice because in their agricultural practice without machines, they beat the rice to separate the paddy from the husk. But if you came upon a pile in which the rice had already been removed, and then you do your work to beat the husk, there's nothing going to come from it. But you could say, well, we worked. That is all that the impersonalist actually gets, even if he does beneficial activities. If he doesn't recognize that there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam, to whom everything should be offered. This is very good, that after this activity they sum it up and say, please accept it. Another point is, not only that we offer what we do to Krishna, but we should offer, as they do, so many good things. If your activities are all negligible, rascal activities, and then you say at the end, but all of this, Krishna, we offer to you for your satisfaction. But it's all it's misbehavior. How can you offer that to Krishna? It's like when we offer food or we offer flowers. You can't offer abominable food or rotten flowers. If you can get nice things, however you can, according to your means, you should offer the best. The real thing is devotion. But still, devotion would bring us to offering some nice thing. Devotion must have some kind of effect. If you pick flowers with devotion, then you look for the nicest flowers. What would you be thinking of otherwise? I want to make this offering with devotion. Let me get all rotten things. That's not devotional attitude. It may be that I want to offer Krishna with devotion the most beautiful flowers, but unfortunately, I have no money to buy flowers, or I'm living in some place, there is no flowers. So then, you may not be able to come in with some beautiful thing. But if then you can just offer whatever you can, perhaps beautiful flowers in your mind, or a nice green patram pushpam, a leaf, Krishna says, that's all right. But if you can get something nice, and you don't, then that's not devotion. Prabhupada would criticize that some rich man would read the verse, patram pushpam palam toyam. Offer me leaf, water, flower, fruit. And Krishna makes it very simple for the purpose that he wants it to be universally applicable, that anybody, anywhere in the world, should be able to get at least some water and a few things like that. So a rich man thinks, well, this is what Krishna asked for, so I'll give him literally, exactly, no more, a little water, a little leaf, and fruit. And for myself, because I'm a very rich man, I will have not only fruit, but all kinds of nicely cooked foods and delicacies and all kinds of flowers in my room and everything like that. And Krishna, because that's all Krishna asked for. And then that's not devotion. So you somehow, by your karma or God's grace, have some wealth or facility, then you have to offer that to Krishna. So the both things have to come together. Everything should be given to Krishna, and it should be many nice things, progressive behavior, all good things, study, and for the purpose of offering to Krishna, except a spiritual master who can bring you to Krishna. So these prajetas are ideal in that way, full of spiritual opulences, but not mayavadis. And then Prabhupada says that this is the Aryan. Aryan means spiritually advanced people. Of course, this word is used. It was even used by Adolf Hitler, of all people, who said that the Nazis were the Aryan race, complete perversion of the Vedic meaning, although it's an oddity that he took it from the Vedic. But others in India now, they also call themselves Arya Samaj, the Arya group. But this is a coined expression for a particular movement, which is not really Aryan, because they don't worship the deity. So Prabhupada has some of this misuse of the word Aryan in mind. It's not somebody who boasts, we are Aryans. But if someone, he can be deduced as an Aryan, who has these activities, who lives in this way. Otherwise, he's not an Aryan. So without being boastful, devotees who practice Krishna consciousness, they should be on the path of the Aryan, the actual Aryan, which has nothing to do with birth. Now, we should all try to practice all of these things in connection with Krishna. Study the Vedas. So, study the Vedas means Vedaischa Sarvaraham Eva Vedya, to understand Krishna. We don't have to study obscure Vedas. We study Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, to go right to the point. Life is short, and we most of us do not become Sanskrit scholars or have time to read all the Upanishads, etc. But actually, everything is summed up in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It's even further information is given. So study the Vedas to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Accept a spiritual master. So that must be in the cyclic succession from Krishna. and to help you engage in practical devotional service. Because we serve the Lord by serving the spiritual master. Then, Brahmins, offer them respect, and advanced devotees, and aged persons who are spiritually advanced. So in different ways, we have to treat these people nicely. That means hear from them, try to learn from them, and not neglect them in their needs. As a modern civilization does, it has no respect for Brahmins or devotees. So the Prachetas, they always managed to do this. And then they were Anasuyave, they were never envious of the brother. Brother refers to themselves, because they were brothers, and other friends, or anyone. Sometimes, when Prabhupada says envious, he means plain malicious. We shouldn't be malicious. But you may also take it in what we usually think of as envious, that another person's fortune turns you green, and you wish him ill. Just to see another person. Even if that person doesn't have a great deal of something, so whatever they have, their very life, you may envy it. So Prabhupada even says that people envy the animals and want to kill them. So this just any kind of malicious attitude towards other living entities is not a Vaishnava. Of course, he does not like the demon, but he doesn't really hate him. He just feels that he's a misguided person, a renegade servant, and either for his own sake, the devotee may avoid that person, or he may try to, despite Krishna's warnings to avoid them, he may try to approach them, to encourage them in spiritual life, but not envious. Why should we waste our time with that negative envy? What are we to gain in that way? It's just self-destructive, ruining our spiritual heart. We're supposed to be Brahmin, so we should be clean-hearted. As Lord Chaitanya told the Brahmin Amoga, who was dirtied his heart with envy of Lord Chaitanya. He criticized Lord Chaitanya. So he became deathly ill then. And Lord Chaitanya went to him and cured him and touched him and said, you're a Brahmin. The heart of a Brahmin should not be envious. Why are you doing this? So we should be aware of this and stop it. And then whatever austerities they did, that was also offered. So reading some more. Arjuna, the Kshatriya, was refusing to fight despite being directly ordered by the Supreme Lord. He was thus chastised by the Lord as belonging to a non-Aryan family. Anyone who is advanced in the devotional service of the Lord certainly knows his duty. It does not matter whether his duty is violent or non-violent. If it is sanctioned and ordered by the Supreme Lord, it must be performed. An Aryan performs his duty. It is not that the Aryans are unnecessarily inimical to living entities. The Aryans never maintained slaughterhouses, and they are never enemies of poor animals. The Prajetas underwent severe austerities for many, many years, even within the water. Accepting austerities and penances is the avowed business of those interested in advanced civilization. So another point is, for the spiritual person, he has to be dutiful. When we accept the authority of Krishna and Krishna's representatives, And then they give us the prescribed activities of devotional service that we are practicing. We make vows, and we have occupational duty, varna ashram. So it's very important as an Aryan not to be whimsical and give these things up, but to be very dutiful. So in the case of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna calls Arjuna non-Aryan, what was he doing to become a non-Aryan? He wanted to be non-violent. And yet, here we are, at the same time, we see non-violent as being praised. You shouldn't be inimical to the animals, even, or have slaughterhouses. Then why was Arjuna being non-Aryan for being non-violent? Because it wasn't his duty at that time for him to be non-violent on the battlefield. This shows that it's very difficult to try to figure out what is the right thing to do by Dharma. You'd be very puzzled in certain instances, reaching moral dilemmas. There is this Dharma to consider, the Dharma of respecting elder people, but there's the Dharma of a Kshatriya to fight. In this case, I don't know what to do. So therefore, we also have our little moral dilemmas all the time. So we should be following the duty that will give us the right direction. If it is sanctioned and ordered by the Supreme Lord, it must be performed. Going on, the word nirandhasam means without food. Eating voraciously and unnecessarily is not the business of an Aryan. Rather, the eating process should be restricted as far as possible. When Aryans eat, they eat only prescribed eatables. Regarding this, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachchati tadaham bhaktya uparatam ashnami prayatatmana. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I will accept it. Bhagavad Gita 9.26. Thus there are restrictions for the advanced Aryans. Although the Lord himself can eat anything and everything, he nonetheless restricts himself to vegetables, fruits, milk, and so on. This verse thus describes the activities of those who claim to be Aryans. Restriction is another point. In the symptoms of surrender, one should do whatever is favorable to Krishna consciousness, but he should avoid or restrict himself from things that are not favorable. This should not be a problem for us, to be willing to accept certain restrictions, which we all have to anyway. By the laws of nature, we are restricted. You can only eat so much, you can only do this much, or else you get sick, or you're restricted in the state in so many ways. If you take another person's property, there'll be trouble for you. It's not that restriction is foreign to us. But although people are restricted by nature and by law, they like to think that they can be unrestricted in some area like morality. I don't want to be restricted. But this is the most important area to be properly behaved in what the Supreme Lord wants us to do. For example, the human being, he should not eat meat, fish, or eggs because of the violence to the other creatures, and because, with that in mind, Krishna, who accepts offerings from devotees, does not accept those things. So you can't offer meat, fish, and eggs to Krishna. Therefore, you eat sin when you eat those things, being unofferable. This is a restriction which a devotee gladly takes, because his tongue may take anything just to be titillated, but that will not really please him, as it will give him difficulty. Whereas if he is instead pleased with whatever Krishna accepts, then he can actually make spiritual advancement. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a translated phrase, that the yogi follows the regulated principles of freedom. So by restricting or regulating our activities, we gain freedom from material life. To get out of this material life, we have to behave in a regulated way. We're already in trouble. We're already entangled in great difficulty. Now to get out, we have to follow some careful instructions. It is not an arbitrary relative thing that, well, why are these instructions? Why does God give us instructions? It's not just instructions to give you trouble, restrictions. It's because you have so many bad tendencies and you're in such a jam that you have to now act in a very careful way to get out. Do this and then do that. But don't do that. Be careful of that. Don't touch the live wire, electricity. Don't drink the poison. Be careful of the fire. Don't fall into the pit. You say, well, why all these restrictions? They must be followed, or if you don't follow any one of them, in this dangerous world, at every step, you'll be killed in a minute. So understand and follow the careful, perfect instructions, which include some restrictions. People are so foolish. Sometimes even want spiritual life, and then when they're told, but you know there are some restrictions, they say, oh, why? Why restrictions? As if we were God Almighty, that there should be no limit on us or any restriction. These things you can do. And if you do them, then you get you reach unlimited freedom. You get out of your problematic situation for bliss and knowledge. The goal is unlimited freedom. The goal is unlimited happiness and knowledge. But to get there, you have to be very careful on this path. A dangerous path it is, the material world. We have to walk close behind the guides and do whatever they say, knowing that it's dangerous and that they know what is best for us. There has to be some faith like that. So there's a lot of many different points and different qualities and everything. We've just gone over them kind of in a summary way. Maybe you have some questions now about particular things. Yes.
Sometimes before people become devotees, they're into all sorts of nonsensical things, you know, and not very religious. And when Krishna consciousness comes along, they take to it immediately, and that's okay. And other people, they seem to be religious all their lives and striving to be good all their lives, and they don't take to Krishna consciousness. Can you talk about that for a bit?
Well, as to why it happens, the person who is steeped in sinful activities, he may just get the mercy of, the mercy of associating with a devotee of the Lord, and then his dormant Krishna consciousness is just awakened. A lot has to do with getting the right association. Now, you say a person is being religious all his life and doesn't take to Krishna consciousness. There might be different versions of that. If the person is actually religious, say he's practicing in another religion, well then we don't say that he's not, to some degree, already Krishna conscious. He may be practicing Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means God consciousness. He may be, if he actually is an Aryan, he wouldn't be unnecessarily killing the animals. He would be offering everything to God. So if that kind of religious person, we don't say that he's not Krishna conscious. He is. But if a person is just nominally religious and is stuck to that, and then when told about bhakti yoga, in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement and says, oh, no, no, I don't need any spiritual help, any spiritual advancement. I've got everything in my religion. That's because he's stuck in the rituals or the externals and thinks he's got it and thinks this is, why is this Hare Krishna devotee bothering me? He's offering me another set of rituals in his religion. I've already got them. Why should I change? He doesn't understand that he's not really practicing Krishna consciousness. So, of course, there may be many reasons why somebody does take who appears to be in a certain position of goodness, and somebody doesn't take who appears to be in goodness, and somebody does take who appears to be in passion or ignorance. But the followers of Lord Chaitanya, following his example, they just try to approach everyone without discriminating who should receive it and who should not. Because some things you can't see. The person who appeared to be sinful, he may have a lot of pious credit behind him. In previous lives, he practiced a lot of yoga or spiritual life. And then he fell down, and now in this lifetime, by bad association, he's come out to be a real rascal. But actually he's very spiritually inclined. He doesn't look it. And the other person maybe actually have less inclination. Which is another reason that we should be careful not to judge people just by what they happen to be doing now. Oh, we shouldn't judge. This person is doing this, he must be a demon. This person is doing that, it must be good. But we have to try to, as it says here, anusuyave, not be envious of any living entity. And the best way to do that is to be yourself enlisted in the practice of Krishna consciousness and then set that example to others and invite them to also worship and serve the Lord. Your question is a little similar to Mathura's question yesterday, that why do people with a certain educational background or spiritual background take and others don't? Some of these things we can't really figure out. And they're really not absolute considerations. Well, yeah, first of all, when you say the root of envy, that is envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. That's where it starts. We have an original spiritual identity, but somehow we misuse it, and the form of that misuse is to think, why should Krishna be all in all? I'm as good as Krishna. So, and we have, as absurd as it is, because of our constitutional position as tiny and Krishna as infinite, we are envious of him as if he unfairly has something that we don't and we should have. So that's where it comes from. And then our envy gets distributed to everyone. So then your point is, besides the root, what was the other thing you were saying there?
Well, it seems like as we go further and further into this, like spiritualizing and examining ourselves a little introspectively, you see, I begin to see envy in everything you do practically.
Mm.
It's like it's all pervasive. It seems to be, it's like it can't be used in the spiritual
context. Oh, it can't be used in the spiritual world, right. Can't be used in the spiritual world because it's a malicious thing, and there everyone is in harmony serving Krishna, and among the devotees there's all harmony, so they wish each other well, and if one devotee does something outstanding, it doesn't cause pain to the others. They don't have that horrible thing. If you can start to see it, that your vision is always tainted by those feelings, and that's at least you start to recognize it. It's better than not recognizing it. Like that Magrari the hunter, he thought that it was quite all right to kill animals and leave them twitching in pain. He really thought it was all right because his father taught him, and his father taught him, he said, "That's my name is Magrari, enemy of the beast. My father taught me this, and when I do it, it gives me pleasure. Immediate sense gratification." He had become so cruel and covered over. So then Narada's first thing was to tell him how dangerous it was and how horrible it was to cause pain for others. Then in his case, as soon as he saw it, and he saw how dangerous it was for him, he immediately wanted to give it up. Of course, that was due to not just the lesson itself, but to the association of Narada. That actually came first. As soon as he saw Narada, even when he was still convinced that he should be a hunter, he said, "You are a very wonderful person. I would like to serve you." And then Narada pointed out his dangerous situation. So by the association of the devotees, we have to see first that envy is holding us back, because we want to advance in spiritual life, otherwise we wouldn't be practicing. So I would say it's an advance, it's a good step forward that you start seeing this, even though you don't like to see it, and then you have to keep removing it. That's why you have to be thoughtful. Your first impulse is to be envious here, to be envious there, to be envious there. So then in each instance you have to think twice and not be like that. Catch it. Catch the bad thought. We hear some person is praised that we all want to thank so-and-so Das for distributing so many books today. He worked very hard and has pleased his spiritual master by distributing all these books. And then you go, "Jai!" But you're thinking, as each thing was described, oh. Why was it all so horrible to hear that he worked very hard, that he was very surrendered? Because you may think, "But I'm not surrendered, so he shouldn't come off as surrendered." So many crazy things. So there's no way out of it except to start seeing all this stuff that we're doing, and then think, "I don't like what I see. I don't want to be like this." We read, an Arian is not somebody who boasts, but he's an actual devotee of the Lord. So you have to go through that seeing the envy, and then when we really dislike it, then it shouldn't be that hard to eventually start to make progress in getting rid of it. Just assure, we can be assured, don't worry, you're not going to lose out if you give up your envy. You'll actually gain. Don't worry. You'll do fine without it. And if you keep being envious, it's not going to make you so much better anyway, at all. It's not really working in our case. see, we're surrounded by everyone in the material world also does these things in order, they think, to exist and to get on. So we think, well, this is what you have to do. Therefore, the devotees, they should be non-envious. It's described, that word is also used, dharma projita kaitavo chaparamo nirmatsaranam. Nirmatsaranam. The devotees who appreciate Srimad Bhagavatam, they are not envious. So, by associating with the devotees who are non-envious, we can do that's better than associating with people who are envious and make us think that that's the normal thing. Janaka Pundi has a verse about that the snake is envious of living beings because he not only defends himself, apparently, like other creatures do, but even if there's no need to attack a creature, he attacks it. But as envious as he is, there are mantras that can be used and the snake will not bite, it'll be tamed. But the human being's envy cannot be tamed, Janaka said. It was a very negative picture of humanity's envy. It's worse than the snake's bite. Well, materially it can't be cured, but it can be cured by the spiritual process if you completely change. More on that?
It's kind of like an expansion that I think does not have it.
Well, just on the point of that, maybe Maharaj, you know, we say Krishna Prem is the real side of lust, like this perverted reflection. Well, it seems like we're just associating this quality of envy as if it's like Shani Goswami said, he read it. It can't be used in this spiritual world.
Has no counterpart in this world.
Yeah. Where does it come from?
Right. Everything has to come from someplace. So the things that exist in the spiritual world, they have no resemblance to some of the things that get so perverted here. Actually, lust also has no resemblance to love in the spiritual world. Just a little bit. It's like the upside down and perverted reflection of the tree in the water. What you do have is the transcendental competition, as it's called, of devotees in the Krishna Leela being impelled by another devotee's service which pleases Krishna to try to do something themselves. But he says that spirit is there to try to please Krishna even more than he was pleased by another devotee. But it's all like just to please Krishna and not to put down that other person. That person gave me an inspiration by pleasing Krishna. They gave him beautiful flowers and he was very pleased. Aha, so that's how you can please Krishna. But I bet if I gathered even more flowers with more devotion, he'd be even more pleased. I will outdo that pleasure of Krishna. Why? Because I want to see Krishna even more happy. If he was happy by that, I think I could make him even more happy. So that's the original. But then when it comes here, it's like, oh, that Gopi X pleased Krishna. Watch out for her. She's developing a good relationship with Krishna. This is bad. Because I want the relationship with Krishna and not her. So maybe we'll spread some rumors about her or find out where she gets the flowers and cut them off so she'll give Krishna a bad offering. As if we'll even go so far as to want Krishna to be not pleased by that devotee. But if Krishna's not pleased, why should a devotee like that? This is envy. Envy among devotees would actually take that form, that the so-called devotee who's envious would actually be pleased to see Krishna disturbed. good, Krishna's disturbed with her. But the real devotee would think, oh, Krishna should never be displeased. And it has all these perverted forms. But although it's called competition, not only does it take the pure form I described, that one is inspired to do service, but he's also inspired to associate with that devotee. Oh, that devotee pleased Krishna. I'm also a devotee of Krishna. Krishna really gave that devotee some intimate, pleasing association. I want to associate with that devotee and learn about from them. Then you approach in a pure-hearted way and say, you're very pleasing to Krishna. Can you please teach me? And the devotee will say, yes. So that's like pure, which is not like the envy here, but a kind of a competitiveness among devotees to outdo different services and please Krishna. Otherwise, there are some things in the spiritual world that, or there are some things in the material world that just aren't there, but they come from there. And they get so twisted when they get here that they don't seem to have come from any place. When Krishna does them, or when the pure devotees do them, they're all good. A lot of it has to do with why we're envious is defense, one of the four things: eating, mating, sleeping, and defense, or fear. That I'm afraid that if I'm not very careful and envious, then people will take advantage of me. So envy is one of my defense methods. Because everybody is fighting, so I have to fight too. And envy is one of my defending methods to help me get sense gratification and to lord it over. But if we understand that I don't want to lord it over, and Krishna will take care of me and send me whatever I need or not, I don't have to defend myself by being envious. And really, all these things, all these anarthas, they really all come from ignorance. It's just ignorance. You don't need to be envious. There's no reason to be. But you've got some misconception that you ought to be envious because it's good for you. You're just in ignorance. Everything is ignorance. Then when we can be enlightened, we say, I don't need that. There's no need for it. How foolish I was. So the knowledge that the devotees give is called Dibya Gyan, divine transcendental knowledge, Om Agyana Timurandasha. I was in darkness, the spiritual masters opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Now with knowledge, I see I don't need these things. I give them up. So the teaching process liberates us. And we're all supposed to be like that, teachers, examples. So we have to not be ignorant ourselves or have these qualities like envy. All right. One more.
In one of his letters, Prabhupada says how the devotee has to develop character by following principles. And that's very, a couple of places I saw it actually, that's very important that everybody has. You know,
okay.
Yeah. So then, Lord Chaitanya says, in I think two places also, that a devotee, particularly a householder, has to be very moral about what he does. If he's engaging in some business, it has to be moral and simple. So that he also follows his basic principles. But that's like, you know, to be honest and to be a good, upstanding person. But there seems to be another kind of honesty or truthfulness is talked about. In the first canto, it says that to the truthful devotee, you know, devotional service kills God in his heart.
What is that other truthfulness?
Yeah, what is that other truthfulness?
I don't know what you mean, that there's another kind of truthfulness.
Well, it seems that there's honesty in material dealings, but then there's a more fundamental honesty. Like, I'm not only honest on a social level, you just don't cheat people, but deeper kind of...
I have a book coming out called Truthfulness, The Last Leg of Religion, and I try to talk all the different aspects of truthfulness. But when you say like that, you know, the transcendental honesty, I think of the honesty of accepting God and worshiping Him. That's beyond just being, not cheating in your business and being nice to your wife and your country and everything, which are important things. But if you say there seems to be a transcendental honesty or another honesty, that would be to know I'm the eternal servant of God, and this is the real position I have. So everything should be done for Him. To the devotee who is truthful, non-duplicitous. But it's a struggle to become honest from our dishonest tendency. All right, stop then. Thank you. All glories to Prabhupada.